The will's not in space or time, and its workings are not susceptible to causal explanations. In Schopenhauer's view, space and time are the forms of the knowing through which the will becomes a plurality for our understanding. That is, the singular will becomes many appearances in space and time. We experience one event occurring here at this time and another occurring there at that time. Space and time are thus the principles of individuation, a concept for which Schopenhauer always uses the Latin phrase principium individuationis. The will is not a plurality, because plurality is possible only in space and time.
The will, as thing in itself, lies outside the province of the principle of sufficient reason, in all its forms, and is consequently completely groundless, although each of its phenomena is entirely subject to that principle. Further, it is free from all plurality, although its phenomena in time and space are innumerable.
We might imagine the will as a single root running beneath the ground from which numerous shoots appear above the surface. These shoots appear as a plurality, yet they share a single life source. But this image still doesn't convey the exact sense in which the unity of the will must be understood. For the idea of a single root has within it the possibility of a plurality of roots. In Schopenhauer's view of the will, it's impossible for there to be a plurality of wills.
It is itself one, yet not as an object is one, for the unity of an object is known only in contrast to possible plurality. Again, the will is one not as a concept is one, for a concept originates only through abstraction from plurality. But it is one as that which lies outside time and space, outside the principium individuationis, that is to say, outside the possibility of plurality.
In his own way, Schopenhauer agrees with the view of 19th century German Romanticism that nature is one. For Schopenhauer, this one, this hidden unity of nature and of the world, is will. Despite the wondrous variety of natural phenomena in which the will shows itself, the will is one and the same in them all.
The will reveals itself just as completely and just as much in one oak as in millions. Their number, their multiplication in space and time, has no meaning with regard to the will, but only with regard to the plurality of the individuals who know in space and time, and who are themselves multiplied and dispersed therein. But that same plurality of those individuals again applies not to the will, but only to its phenomenon.
If the will is the inner being of the world, and if this will is one, why isn't the world a harmonious whole? Schopenhauer clearly thinks that the natural world is rife with conflict. He believes the will opposes itself throughout nature. It feasts on itself. If we imagine several thoughtless people, all of whom want as much as they can have of exactly the same thing, we can easily see how conflict might erupt among them. The same sort of model applies to Schopenhauer's view that conflict is inevitable among the various expressions of the will in nature. The will as thing in itself is not a desire for anything in particular. It's merely a blind urge. When the will expresses itself as appearance or representation, this urge is objectified as the will to live. According to Schopenhauer, the will to live is the fundamental characteristic of the will.
The will, considered purely in itself, is devoid of knowledge, and is only a blind, irresistible urge, as we see it appear in inorganic and vegetable nature, and in their laws, and also in the vegetative part of our own life. Through the addition of the world as representation, developed for its service, the will obtains knowledge of its own willing, and what it wills. Namely, that this is nothing but this world, life, precisely as it exists. We have therefore called the phenomenal world the mirror, the objectivity of the will. Und das, was the will wills, is always life. Just because this is nothing but the presentation of that will for the representation, it is immaterial and a mere pleonasm if instead of simply saying the will, we say the will to live.
When Schopenhauer says that the will always wills life, he's referring to the life of a species of being, not the life of an individual member. From the will's point of view, the individual person is purely a way to preserve human beings as a species. Birth and death are essential to the existence of an individual man or animal, but they are incidental to the will as thing in itself. The individual's struggle to live is doomed to failure, but his death doesn't affect the will. The will is immortal and indifferent to the life of the individual.
For it is not the individual that nature cares for, but only the species. The individual, on the contrary, has no value for nature, and can have none. For infinite time, infinite space, and the infinite number of possible individuals therein are her kingdom.
Since the individual has value only to preserve the species, Schopenhauer argues that the longing for personal immortality is foolish.
Therefore, from this point of view, it seems just as absurd to desire the continuance of our individuality, which is replaced by other individuals, as to desire the permanence of the matter of our body, which is constantly replaced by fresh matter. It appears just as foolish to embalm corpses as it would be carefully to preserve our excreta.
The only immortality possible for the individual is the vicarious immortality of the species. Nature's various species don't equally express the nature of the will. Each species constitutes a certain grade of the will's expression. Schopenhauer thinks these different grades or levels are themselves fixed. All the members of a single species of animal or plant manifest the will to the same extent. He calls these levels ideas.
Therefore, by idea, I understand every definite and fixed grade of the will's objectification, insofar as it is thing in itself, and therefore foreign to plurality.
Since the will as the thing in itself is one, it ultimately strives to appear in one form or idea that would contain all the possible expressions of the will. Schopenhauer says, the idea of man is the closest the will comes to this perfect expression. But this idea still falls short.
Although in man, as idea, the will finds its most distinct and perfect objectification, this alone could not express its true being. In order to appear in its proper significance, the idea of man would need to manifest itself, not alone and torn apart, but accompanied by all the grades downwards, through all the forms of animals, through the plant kingdom to the inorganic.
The striving of the will for higher and higher grades of expression produces conflict within nature. Since each level of the will's objectification fights to express its own idea, each idea wins expression only at the expense of other ideas. Each species maintains its own life at the expense of the members of another species.
Yet this strife itself is only the revelation of that variance with itself that is essential to the will. This universal conflict is to be seen most clearly in the animal kingdom. Animals have the vegetable kingdom for their nourishment, and within the animal kingdom, again, every animal is the prey and food of some other. This means that the matter in which an animal's idea manifests itself must stand aside for the manifestation of another idea, since every animal can maintain its own existence only by the incessant elimination of another's. Thus, the will to live generally feasts on itself and is in different forms its own nourishment, till finally the human race, because it subdues all the others, regards nature as manufactured for its own use.